just adoption, approval of the minutes from April 12th. I'm sorry for the lack of accommodation for the public. The our regular committee room is now a dedicated conference committee room, and so it's not available to us even when the conference committees are not meeting. The first bill we have on the agenda is Senate File 1196, Senator Denbaugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Back with our mobile home, our manufactured home park closure bill, dealing with relocation for residents. We have the bill in its entirety as it's morphing through its stages to make everybody happy. So I'm getting pretty excited as being the fifth year I've been working on this issue to actually have both sides keep hammering out the little details. The last time before you, we only had the issues that related to local government, and members wanted to see the complete bill, which is before you. The issues, I'll go through the issues that are local government related, and then we can talk about the bill in its entirety. People can actually direct the questions so that we respect members' times. Section 2, starting at line 1.19, is where Section 2 is, but really 1.28 is what where we're talking about. When a manufactured home park is in the process of closing, that the governing body of the affected municipality is required to hold a public hearing and review the closure statement. Section 4.
Senator Gendauer,
yes.
Where are you?
Oh, I'm working off. I'm sorry. Are you? Does everybody have the
first,
A3 amendment, 1196A3?
First engrossment.
The
first engrossment is set aside, and we have a delete everything amendment.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, members. I assume
technical changes that were made. So to get us going on that, Senator Bickerman moves the delete everything amendment. But Senator Youngbauer, since this is not the committee of origin, you do need to explain it, even though we understand that the most of what is being amended is technical in nature.
Yes, Madam Chair, members, the A3 amendment is technical changes on from the first bill. Again, as I have talked about, both sides have been meeting consistently, hammering out the details, and a lot of it is really the details in the language that mean different things to different people. So we want to make sure that the language is as clear as possible. And that's really what the A3 amendment is, the latest version, as we're hammering out the details of the language.
Okay.
So again, Madam Chair, members, line 1.28 talks about the specifics of the public hearing and what the local unit of government must do in terms of that public hearing requirement. And again, I'm going to move through the local government related provisions, and then we can talk about how those all relate back to the overall bill that's been through Senator Marty's committee. The next section that deals with local government is the section 4, paragraph F, where it caps maximum reimbursements for residents of $4,000 for a single section and $8,000 for a multi-section. But members, as we talk about this, I believe it's 20 or 21 communities around the state of Minnesota actually have park closure rules in place today. And so what we wanted to do was we want a consistent law around the state, but we didn't want, in the event that those particular residents would have a higher payout, this actually would have a calculation for the residents that would give them the greater of either the new statute or the existing ordinance that was in place at that local unit of government.
So explain that again, just one time, Subdivision 15.
Some local units of government have a local park closure ordinance, whereby the residents of those manufactured home parks have a specific payout in the event of closure and for relocation costs. We did not want to change the statute and give them a worse deal than they would currently have under their local ordinance, but we wanted a statewide framework. So there's a calculation that's used that would give that local person the greater of their existing ordinance or the new statute we're putting in place. Okay, then members, Section 6, Subdivision 15. That's probably the key one in local government related because, again, members, as we talked about before, we are preempting local ordinances and we are making this a statewide statute so that it affects all manufactured home park residents in the state of Minnesota. But because those 20 or 21 communities already have in place existing ordinances, we are preempting that to make it a one rule statewide, but again, we didn't want to cheat anybody out of something they might have better in the event of a park closure, so that's why we use that calculation to give them the greater of the existing local ordinance that was in place today or the new state statute that we're hoping to pass this year. So that subdivision 15 is the preemption of those ordinance. The rest of the bill, Madam Chair and members, talks about setting up the relocation trust fund, the establishment of the fund, and in previous in the bill, we talk about the actual payments and what we are capping things at for today. And the reason we have caps today, members, in the event of a closure, once we start establishing this fund, we don't want to have something where under one park closure the whole fund is, you know, not capped and has some arbitrary numbers where people could then fight and end up extinguishing the whole fund in one park closure. So we're starting with some caps, but we really anticipate and have some sunset language, I'm assuming, still in here since I just got the latest copy. But we wanted to come back in a couple years and be able to relook to make sure we had the right amounts of payouts to make sure that the fund is set up properly and to be able to kind of, again, look at an overview and make sure it's all set up the way we should have had it so that we're protecting both residents and owners in the chains of use and closure and relocation issues. Are there specific questions?
Comments or questions for Senator Youngbauer? I do think that we'll do him the courtesy of adopting the delete all amendments since it was just technical changes to the first engrossment. So I think Senator Vickerman had moved the adoption of the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment, A3, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails that the A3 amendment is adopted. Senator Youngbauer, do you have testimony?
I have people from both sides that are available for testimony if there's specific questions, but I guess the main thing, we can nod our heads and say that we are in agreement and we're excited that we've come this far and hope that we can, as a late bill, get it out of rules and actually get something put into statute.
It does need to go to finance.
Finance, okay.
And then it would go to rules.
To rules, okay, finance. Yes.
Yeah, we'll go to the floor.
And then redirect it to.
So we'll recommend it to pass, and then it will, at that point, intercepted by the Rules Committee, since it is a late bill, and the Rules Committee will act on whether it should go to finance for further action there. Is that correct? Well, I know, but the committee report, from here, we move it to the floor, not with a recommendation to go to any other committee, is what I'm asking. And then automatically on the floor, it is sent to the Rules Committee, and the Rules Committee makes a determination in their committee report as to, if they hear your bill, as to which committee it would be appropriate to send it to. So their committee report goes to the floor with a recommendation that the bill be referred to the Finance Committee, but we don't make that recommendation here, is what I'm asking. Beg pardon? Okay, I'm glad I'm asking these questions. So, and we're all agreed, Mr. McGowan, that the motion with regard to this bill would be to send it to be referred to Finance. When it goes to the floor, it would be, because it's a late bill, it would automatically be sent to the Rules Committee. Is that your understanding?
Madam Chair, my understanding is at this date, everything goes to the floor. We just move the bill to pass as we normally would, without any recommendation.
Without a recommendation,
right,
for a re-referral?
Right.
Okay, so that is what the motion will be then. Are there further questions or comments to...
Well, Madam Chair, I'd just like to make a comment. I've chaired this committee over the years, and we've been tossing this thing back and forth. I hope it finally comes to rest, and we can go on. And I compliment you for, you got them all together. I tried, but it wasn't that easy.
So Senator Vickerman moves that Senate File 1196, as amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
The next bill we have, Senator Chargan. We have Senator Olsen. And where are our authors? Senator Marty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This Senate file contains a couple of provisions that are in the Environment Policy Omnibus Bill. They mainly deal, I think actually exclusively deal with our ATV portion that had some impact that the committee needed to see. And so we copied those sections onto Senate File 2040 and sent them here. The ATV sections, the whole ATV omnibus portion of my bill represents a great deal of work a great deal of balancing of interests between ATV riding interests and environmental interests. So the portion, I'm trying to figure out which.
Certainly it's going to be section one.
Exemption from rulemaking.
Subdivision
right,
four
right, right.
And section two, subdivision four, exemption from rulemaking.
Right, okay, that was the.
And what we need to know from you, Senator Chaudhary, and I think we've asked this question before, so we just need the explanation repeated about the why written order is more appropriate than rulemaking in both of these areas.
Okay.
All right. In both of these sections, and maybe the DNR folks can just give us the explanation of why this is more appropriate, and that's a.
Madam Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, and as I've stated to the committee previously, the two sections you see with the language that says determinations on 2.7 sub 4, determinations of the commission under this section may be by written order published in the state register, and then on 2.24 with the same language. This is language we put in statute to where there's a decision, a determination that needs to be made that doesn't need to go through the rulemaking process. In the first section, it's the establishment of a trail. We know the route. We know where it's going to be. We just want to make sure that we're doing it in an open and honest fashion, that people can see it, that it is published in the state register. The second section is the same. We're designating an area of the forest. We know what that section is. We have boundaries. We want to make sure people, again, are informed of those decisions and what's going on. And I'd mentioned, Madam Chair, that several years ago we did have a rulemaking exemptions bill where Commissioner Merriam took the department through a lengthy process in the interim of all of the determinations the commissioner had to make in statute, and where appropriate we did exempt those with this particular language. Since that point forward, we want to make sure we carry this language in a lot of different bills. That's why we're in front of your committee so often. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure we continue that process of making sure where there's a decision to be made, it's either exempted in statute, we use an expedited, or we use a full-blown rulemaking process to avoid us from backslipping on that work we did several years ago.
Okay. Are there questions for Senator Chaudhry or Mr. Myers from the DNR about this process of granting exemptions from rulemaking when written orders are called for? Senator Gerlach, could you make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Senator Gerlach moves that Senate file 2040, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
We need Senator Olson. Engrossment. The bill was given a second reading, and then on general orders, Senator Olson moved that the bill be sent to the Committee on State and Local Government as per our agreement because of the particularly Section 16 in the bill dealing with a lot of rulemaking authority. Senator Olson, is that the only section of the bill that is under the jurisdiction of this committee?
Madam Chair, that is my understanding. In transportation, we pulled it out because we wanted to move the bill in the omnibus bill. So it's traveling in the omnibus bill without Section 16. So we're here today to address the rules and revisions. I have David Peterson with the Bus Association and Brad Lindell also.
And Senator Olson, could you just give us a one-minute overview of the purpose of the bill, and then we'll talk about the rulemaking?
The bill
doesn't need to be lengthy, but just what problem is this bill going to solve?
Well, generally, I believe it's every 5 years they do a federal update on safety standards for school buses, and so this brings Minnesota law into compliance with the recommendations. And I'll turn it over to Brad to address that. But the other big thing is this classification called multifunction buses, where you kind of see them, they're like a van cab, but then they have a bus body on them. And the goal is to get kids out of these, like a Dodge Ram van that holds 15 passengers into a bus that has a more solid body on it, so that if there is an accident, there's a lot more protection for the children or the students. So I'll turn it over to Brad to talk about that national standard.
Mr. Lundell, if you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell today here with Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation, for whom I do legislative work. Dave Peterson from St. Paul Public Schools can probably give you the more chapter and verse on this, but basically what Senator Olson outlined is correct. Every 5 years, there's a national school bus congress. We have representatives from Minnesota that do attend that, where they update rules, both dealing with vehicle standards. What we are doing in this bill, and this bill was before the legislature last year, it was in I believe the House bill, it was in the Senate bill rather, but with the way the conference committee did not come together last year with the education, in the area of education, these provisions, for the most part, fell out of the bill. For no particular reason except that many things fell out of bills last year, and this just happened to be a collection of things that did fall out. I don't think that there was never any opposition voiced to the bill last year, and this is generally considered a non-controversial bill. I can turn it over to Dave Peterson, and he can talk a little bit more about, we also do some variance from federal law. We have that ability. There are a couple things in here that give Minnesota a little bit of flexibility on sea height. I think the federal is going to, 24 inches or 28 inches, and we're staying with an option, seeing that Minnesota drivers would like to keep two sets. There's an advantage to having a high back seat, and there's a disadvantage to having a high back seat, and so we've kind of left that open. Dave, why don't you...
I have some questions. I'm trying to understand why the specificity of a direction to the Commissioner of Public Safety as to exactly how he must amend the rules, since you said that sometimes we don't amend the rules or we don't change based on federal law. And I'm trying to find... I'm trying to find a reference to federal law that is causing us to be so specific in the changes to the rulemaking. And why isn't the commissioner just given, just directed to change the law, to change the rules to make it conform to the federal law with exceptions and then state the exceptions? Why is it done this way?
Madam Chair, I think basically that's the intent. I think one of the problems...
No, but I'm asking, why is it done this way, Mr. Lundell?
Dave can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the problem is right now with the Department of Public Safety, we used to have an Office of School Bus Safety. That office has now been folded into the commercial vehicle section, mm-hmm. and so there's no real home for school bus. I guess the bureaucracy has been cut to the extent it's very difficult to get rules made because the people that are in charge of making the rules are busy doing their other jobs, which is inspecting school buses. So we're having a hard time getting these things on track. There's nothing here that would be controversial.
That's not answering my question. I don't see any reference to a federal law that this is then becoming in conformity to. And where are the, and it just seems very strange to have this so specific, and I'm asking why do it this way, and is this the way it's been done before, rather than doing it by exception, to say adopt the rules as, to make them in conformity with the federal law with the following exceptions, and on those rules adopt X, Y, and Z. Why is it being done this way? And is this the way it's been done in the previous times when rules have been changed to conform to new federal standards on bus safety? And any of the three of you can answer that.
Madam Chair, if you look in Section 8 where it says national standards adopted, this is the boilerplate that we've used in the past.
Mr. Lundell, I don't know how to make my question clearer. Why is it done by specific direction on what to change rather than referencing the federal law in the revision of the rules, except for those changes that aren't going to be the federal law?
Madam Chair.
I'm not trying to ask something difficult here.
Madam Chair, are you saying that maybe we don't really need Section 16?
I'm just asking why it's done this way, that's all.
Madam Chair, the only response I can give is that it's just the way we've always done it. Mm. I mean, I've been through two or three of these cycles of bills, and this is consistent with the way that we've done it in the past.
And was there ever any discussion about why that's a better way of doing it, or why you need to do it this way?
Given the nature of the work, no. There's never been discussion, and we're certainly open to doing it a different way if that's what the committee sees fit.
Doing it like you've always done it doesn't give me a rationale about why this is a good way. I mean, it seems extremely specific, and I have no objection to that. It's just very curious because most of the time when we have provisions in in statute, and this is not codified, obviously, but when they come in, they say, well, the commissioner will adopt rules in conformance with whatever federal law there was before. And I'm just simply curious why that would be done. That's all.
Right.
I'm not picking on it. I'm just curious.
Madam Chair, my name is David Peterson.
Mr.
I'm
Pierce.
Communications Officer with the Minnesota Association for Group Transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And the rulemaking provision in this bill not only addresses updating to federal standards for bus construction, but also deals with updating all the public safety rules related to school safety. We've been asking the Department of Public Safety to update the rules for approximately 4 years now, but because of the staffing level, we've been unable to update the rules. One piece that comes to mind and what we're supposed to be updated is passenger case of school buses under rulemaking as school buses classified as a type 1 or type 2 school bus. Under state law since 1995, school buses have been classified as type A, type B, type C, or type D. So there's a lot of rules that are very outdated that need to be updated. The Department of Public Safety hasn't been able to do through
the
rulemaking.
Mr. Pearson, so the Department of Public Safety has responsibility for updating the rules, and they haven't done it. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
And so by being specific, and this would be, I'm now getting to an answer to my own question, I think, by being specific here, at least they're put on notice, and the public then knows exactly the way in which those rules should be change, so at least there's some notice as to what the intent of these rules have to be to guide school districts and bus companies and so forth. So to be in session law, even if the Department of Public Safety would continue to drag its feet. Is that correct?
That's the exact correct answer.
Okay, well, then that makes sense. Is there a discussion or further questions for Senator Olsen or his witnesses? Senator Lori, are you comfortable making a motion?
Sure.
Senator Lori moves that Senate File 647 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Lori.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate File 1194 is a long time coming. I was co-author of this bill when I was first elected in 1987, and it's finally out, we hope, to become law. It has happened in many other states. Matter of fact, in the last, since this bill was introduced a couple months ago, Utah has passed it, Oregon, Kentucky, New Jersey, and Maryland. Kentucky, which is the heart of tobacco country, passed it 36-0 in their Senate and their House, also unanimously. So it's good to see progress in this. This is a bill that would require cigarettes be constructed, made in such a way that they tend to self-extinguish after they're, if they're left somewhere, left idle. And the problem is if they don't, they tend to, if somebody falls asleep while smoking or something else, or it falls out of a trash can onto a carpet or something, the smoldering will ignite a fire. It's the leading cause of fire-related fatalities in Minnesota. It's about 15 or so a year. And New York started the trend about 3-4 years ago, passing legislation to do this. This legislation is designed to be as close as possible to other states so that I'm not real big on local preemptions, but this does have local preemption, and this also repeals itself if the federal government enacts a similar law. And with that, I think the tobacco industry was willing to support the bill. I have Niall Zickman from the Fire Chiefs Association here in to speak in just a second, but we did have three technical changes to the bill.
Okay,
I'd like to.
So Senator Marty, that our jurisdiction is Section 10. Is that correct?
Just that's the Section 10 is probably the only direct one affecting this committee.
Rulemaking,
yes.
Okay, rulemaking in Section 6.
Yes. And
is the rulemaking there going to get done? It seems like on school buses that you need to tell them exactly what to do.
And, Madam Chair, that's because they are trying to keep it consistent between the states. The tobacco industry was very, very
concerned. Okay, that's a really good reason for rulemaking as opposed to not having language in the statutes themselves.
But, Madam Chair, if it's possible, I would like to ask for, I think it's a technical amendment. It happens three places. One is on page 5, line 24 and 25. We'd basically be moving the word cigarette two words earlier. So afterward, reduced on line 24 of page 5, we'd insert cigarette. And then we'd delete cigarette from the beginning of line 25. So it would read reduced cigarette ignition propensity. And the same change, two other places on page 8, in the headnote on line 22, reduced cigarette ignition propensity account. So cigarette would be moved two words further forward.
I'm sorry,
again.
Did you say that again?
Page 8, line 22, and also line 24, the word cigarette would be inserted after reduced, and it would be deleted from where it is otherwise two words later. So the same change in lines 8.22 and 24 is on page 5, 24 and 25.
Okay.
I'd like to move
Senator
that.
Marty moves the amendment that he just described on those three places in the bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, now Zickman here, quickly to say a couple comments on the importance of this and then whatever questions about the
thank you, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Niall Zickman, today representing the Minnesota Fire Chiefs, the Minnesota Fire Department Association, the local fire marshals, and the arson investigators, speaking in support of the bill. Just briefly, in the past decade, over 120 Minnesotans have lost their life due to carelessly discarded cigarettes, over $40 million in property damage. The fact, sobering fact, is cigarettes cause 7% of all fires, but 25% of all fire deaths. There really isn't a piece of legislation that you could pass that would have a larger impact on fire safety in the state of Minnesota. And where that really becomes true is the unintended victims and consequences. The Egan fire, all we have to do is wait a week in Minnesota. But this fire was just a couple weeks ago, 20 people homeless because of that carelessly discarded cigarette. No deaths there, but the impacts far transcend just that one event of that discarded cigarette. So again, appreciate and urge your support. Thank you.
Senator Marty, why has this been so difficult to pass? I'm sure that Zickman's probably been able to give the same testimony.
He's been giving the same testimony for many years. And Madam Chair, the tobacco industry kept saying, we couldn't do it.
That they didn't have the technology?
That was the claim, and it was not until New York, they had three firefighters' widows who were killed in a fire caused by cigarette ignition. And they testified, and the New York legislature changed it, and all of a sudden it was possible to do, and so other states, again, it's now up to 10, 12, something like that, states have already done so, and we're hoping we have a national standard soon, which is, again, why we have the repealing this act if federal standards take effect.
Senator Marty, has there been any other states that have had had it in place long enough to have a history of can you even tell whether since a cigarette goes out and doesn't cause a fire that there have been close calls that there just aren't anymore? Or can you give us a little bit of history for any state that's had it in place for longer than a year maybe?
Madam Chair, the only state that's had it in place long enough is the state of New York. They have about 11 months of data, and this is coming from the U.S. Fire Administration that collects that data that's reported in. A 26% reduction that they've been able to track in fire-related cigarette fires, and a 13% reduction in fire deaths related to cigarettes. So that's the only data available, but that's a significant number, in our opinion.
Yes. Senator Roebling, and then Senator Burlock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, and I didn't have time to read all of this, but what happens, two things. If out of state and bring them in, or if the tribal smoke shops sell them.
Mr. Zickman or Senator Marty?
I believe people can bring in cigarettes. Again, we're hoping this becomes a national standard, and states are, again, as I said, there are five states in the past since this bill was introduced in January. It's happening quickly, so we're hoping that that's the case. And I think in tribal, in order to sell cigarettes in Minnesota, it has to have a Minnesota stamp on, and they can't get the Minnesota stamp without this. So I believe they would, I'm not 100% certain of that, but I believe the tribal cigarettes would have to have the same stamp and therefore have to meet the standards.
And Madam Chair, Senator Roman, that's my understanding is that there, I do know there is no penalty if you purchase out of state and bring them in. And the goal, again, is this will happen nationally. And Senator Markey was carrying this at the federal level and passed away. And so there's been efforts now, and there's a new author, so that has set back the national effort, but we expect that to continue. And then the tribal, as Senator Marty described it.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question about the fee, and I know this is not our jurisdiction here, but I'm just curious, what is the $250 fee that goes to the State Fire Marshal's Office? What is that used for?
Madam Chair, Senator Gerlach, as they develop those rules, there will be an enforcement and a tracking mechanism as the cigarette manufacturers have to report to them all of the brands. And so it's just a fee to help cover the administrative costs and enforcing the regulation.
Okay, all right. And then, Madam Chair, I remember this bill several years ago. I was on the House Commerce Committee, and Dennis Hoffman was carrying it. And I voted for it that day in the committee, and that was a few years back. And I thought it was a good idea, because I thought that if you're going to fall sick with a cigarette and you kill yourself through self-immolation, that's sort of an urban Darwinism, and that didn't bother me all that much. But the impact is you have kids and the whole thing.
You sure you put that on tape?
But that was my rationale. I thought because you are impacting a lot of people in a serious way, and it just seemed to make sense at the time. But is there anything in this bill here overall that's radically different than that bill about 3 years ago, or is it essentially the same?
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, Senator Gerlach, the biggest change is we are now, in the past we requested this, we directed the State Fire Marshal to develop the standards. I think we told them to copy New York standards. Here we spell out the standards particularly. And on your point, yes, I remember a case several years ago, a kindergartner up in Aiken County and an 8-year-old in Minneapolis, just horrid tragedies where they're not the ones who were smoking the cigarette, it was somebody else in the apartment or the house. It's a pretty urgent, pretty important thing. It's we'll save lives.
Okay, and then Madam Chair, one last thing. This is the second bill we have a local preemption, some restrictions on that. It's just curious, reminding anyone knows that we have nobody from the League of Cities or anybody that has anything to say on that. We usually have a spirited debate over the whole tug of war on local control issues, but there's nobody here at all today on that. I'm just curious, have they all sort of just said we don't care, or have you heard anything?
Madam Chair, Senator Gerlach, the fire chiefs and the groups I've talked about are represented by Capitol Hill Associates and Sherry Munion Capital Access, and she's spoken to the League, and the League is okay with this. The problem with going with local control on this is it would basically destroy the bill, as we can't have a bunch of different standards from municipality to municipality, and so they are comfortable with this.
Right. I remember the spirited debate on the smoking ban, and of course it's the reverse, but it is what it is.
And Madam Chair, Senator Gerlach, I do not think, well, I think we should give local authorities the ability to do what they should feel they should do. In this case, I think none of them were likely to do so, because developing the standards and realistically, when you're selling a product nationally, if Thief River Falls decided to do this, it wouldn't have an impact. So.
No, I understand you're saying rationally.
Yeah, but.
Okay.
Senator Ropley, and then I have a question for you.
I'm wondering about the manufacturers now. You said if 10 states have this, I'm sure that most of the brands are complying. How soon do you think it will be before that's all that they sell anymore? Because I don't. Is there a preference among consumers to have the kind that doesn't extinguish itself? mean, is, I'm wondering why they wouldn't just do this for everybody, and what the likelihood of that happening, and where the consumer preference is.
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, I've talked with several people, and Representative Osmond, who was the author of the bill in the House in the past, he said he's talked with a number of friends who have smoked the ones that were self-extinguishing, and they didn't notice any difference in taste. One could perhaps cynically argue that the tobacco company likes cigarettes that don't extinguish, because when it extinguishes after you haven't smoked it for a few minutes, people can relight it. You wouldn't sell as many. Realistically, I think your point is right. At a certain point, we now have as much as a third of the state of the U.S. population is now covered by this. I think it gets a little further. They're not going to bother to make two different versions of it. So our hope is that every state, either through federal law, would make the smartest way, but we're hoping to push that forward.
It's unlikely a state would adopt a law that's saying you have to have a cigarette that can't be extinguishable if the industry standard changes, it would seem to me. Senator Morney, on subdivision 5 of section 2, line 412, a discretionary authority given to the state fire marshal there, would that state fire marshal be adopting that standard, a subsequent standard, under rulemaking? It's a question that's posed by council. And would you want to make a clarification to that end? Mr. Bodder, am I stating the question correctly?
Madam Chair, that's correct. It's a little ambiguous right now exactly whether rulemaking would apply, and that's kind of a question. If you don't want it to apply, you probably need language that makes that quite clear, that it will be done without proceeding under Chapter 14. And if you do, it would be helpful to have a phrase clarifying that.
Senator Murray?
So, even if there are future changes, I would suggest it probably doesn't need rulemaking, but I don't know if it's a big problem.
Senator Murray?
Madam Chair,
do you not find it ambiguous?
Yeah, it would be nice if they could do it without rulemaking authority, without having to go through the rulemaking process. Again, that's if they've come up with a different method.
Shall we then, the question from council then was, do you want to clear up the ambiguity by saying they don't have to?
They don't need to. I would prefer that. It's not I'm not sure that this is an urgent problem, but it would be nice if the committee is willing to do that.
Mr. Bonner, what would the language be to give the discretionary authority to the state fire marshal without going through rulemaking?
Madam Chair, members, I think what we want to do is actually pattern this after the language you saw in Senator Shadry's bill. On page 4, line 12, after May, you would insert, by written order published in the state register, adopt a subsequent test method. And it does seem that it would be important that this is notice is given and it's published somewhere so that people are aware of it. And then you'd add the similar exemption from rulemaking that was found in Senate File 2040. That would be a new sentence at the end of, on page 4, line 17, after the period, insert a determination by the state fire marshal under this section is exempt from the rulemaking provisions of Chapter 14, and Section 14.386 does not apply.
So it would be a written order giving public notice, but the process of rulemaking would not be necessary in order to adopt it.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Senator Marty?
I would like to offer that amendment, but with the understanding if we have a big controversy with the tobacco industry over it, I would take it out on the floor if there's a big problem with it.
Why would they object to having a written statement as opposed to going through rulemaking?
I don't know that they would, but I I'd rather, I mean, in other words, I think this is the right way to go, but if they...
Just makes it clear what the discretionary authority
means. Council made a good point on that, so yes.
Okay, so Senator Marty moves the amendment as read to us by Senate Council, fashioned after the language which was in Senator Chaudhary's bill regarding issuing a written order published in the State Register and then specifically exempting them from rulemaking in the adoption of subsequent standard measures for testing SR. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion fails and the amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion or comment? Is there anybody else who wishes to testify either in support or in opposition to this bill? Seeing none, Senator Marty moves that Senate file 1194 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
There being no further business before the committee, we stand adjourned.